the Pharisees get a lot of bad press in the Bible and in Christian preaching. And no doubt, given the story that we heard a few minutes ago about Jesus accusing them of hypocrisy, there will be lots of sermons preached today bagging the Pharisees again. This is not going to be one of them. In fact, I'm not actually going to say very much about them at all. But I will say that it's almost certainly the case that one of the reasons Jesus clashed with the Pharisees so often was because they were the group within Judaism that he had the most in common with. On all the major doctrinal divisions within Judaism in his day, Jesus appears to have been on the same side as the Pharisees. And isn't it always the case that we argue most with those that we almost agree with rather than those that we have almost nothing in common with? Part of what is intriguing me about the particular dispute that we heard of tonight is that although it's described as being about matters of ritual Jewish law and tradition, the actual specifics are not nearly so foreign to us. In fact, if law and tradition had not been mentioned, you might easily have thought that it was just a debate about basic hygiene, or perhaps even modern safe food handling regulations. Like, what it says lay behind the dispute was that the Pharisees do not eat unless they thoroughly wash their hands, and they do not eat anything from the market unless they wash it. And also, they have other practices about washing the utensils for eating and cooking. Now, is there anybody here who thinks there's something morally wrong with washing your hands before you eat? Or with washing the food that's been handled by various people in the market before you eat it? Or washing your plates or saucepans? Anyone who's morally opposed to these things? I didn't think so. I suspect I might get a few more if I asked you to put up your hands if you thought that there is something wrong with not washing your hands before you eat, or your food, or your cookware. So, we're not exactly the polar opposites of the Pharisees on these matters. And of course, we don't usually think of these things as moral issues. They're just basic hygiene and good sense. But let me push that idea a little bit. While most of the time we don't think of these things as moral, just good hygiene, good sense, consideration for other people, there is something that can very easily tip you towards thinking of them as moral issues, and that's when somebody else begins flouting them. This is, of course, exactly what happens in the gospel story that we heard. I suspect that the first reaction of the Pharisees when they saw these people eating without washing their hands was not moral outrage, but simply disgust. Their stomachs turned and they went, "Oh, yuck." And only then did they begin appealing to the laws and the traditions and start thinking that this not only disgusted them, but it must be disgusting to God as well. Many of you, if you walked out of the toilets here and behind someone who you noticed did not wash their hands, and they walked straight out and stuck their hand into a bowl on the supper table and grabbed a big handful of popcorn, you'd probably go pale and avoid the popcorn for the rest of the night. Or you might even take the bowl and tip it in the bin so that no one else ate it either. And you'll probably also begin to think of that person as a bit disgusting and inconsiderate, and before long it does start to seem like a moral issue and you're judging them accordingly. And I don't think you'd be entirely wrong, I'd feel the same. But often there's a bit more kind of shade of grey than that with lots of things. Like, when I was driving through Guatemala a few years ago, I saw some of the worst driving I had ever seen in my life. People had warned me about the crazy driving in Mexico, but Guatemala was a lot worse. Mexico seemed a bit chaotic and anarchic, but I'm okay with a bit of chaotic and anarchic. But Guatemala just seemed homicidal. And I very quickly found myself making value judgments about Guatemalans, or at least about Guatemalan drivers. They were crazy, they were inconsiderate, they had very little respect for human life or safety. And very quickly I found myself making harsh moral judgments about people who were just doing what was absolutely normal in their culture. Now, I still think it's fair to ask some questions about the culture, the driving culture, but I suspect that Jesus would have responded to my judgmentalism about the individual drivers with very similar challenges to those that he put to the Pharisees over this hand-washing incident. Now, the driving incidents offended my perception of safety and consideration for others, but sometimes we're offended in other ways. Sometimes things just seem disgusting. Most people in our society find the thought of eating dog or cat meat disgusting, but in other parts of the world, it's quite normal. Does the fact that I find it disgusting mean that other people are breaking some kind of moral law that's written by God into the fabric of the universe? It might feel that way to me if I tried to do it, but no, it doesn't. But this is an important issue because these gut-level reactions of disgust or revulsion often cloud our judgments about moral rights, the moral rights and wrongs of other people's actions. You don't have to listen for very long to the arguments in the churches about the rights or wrongs of homosexuality before you will hear this one happening. A picture forms in people's minds of what we're talking about and they just go, yuck. And it's very difficult for them to think openly beyond that. I just realised the other day that it's now over 17 years since I first started advocating for the acceptance of homosexual people in the churches. And yet I still have some of that yuck reaction myself. I find the thought of having sex with a man so unattractive that I can barely imagine why a straight woman would ever want to do it, let alone another man. But that doesn't, to me, being attracted to women seems entirely normal. But the fact that it seems and feels normal and something else seems and feels a bit revolting is a very, very unreliable basis for starting to form moral judgments. And as the eating dog meat example shows, our perceptions of normal and disgusting are socially formed. That we were not born with them written into our souls and our consciences by God. So where am I going with all this? Let me draw three conclusions. Firstly, the primary thrust of the gospel is about reconciliation. People who were previously divided are being reconciled to God and to one another in Christ. And whenever we are divided, we tend to believe that we are divided for very good reasons. Those people are different from us, and they do things that are simply wrong, or at least stupid and unsafe, if not outright disgusting and malicious. And we're right to keep our distance from them. And we think that God would not want us to risk being corrupted by being too close to such people. Well, actually, the gospel made known in Jesus Christ says that God would like you very much to take the risk of getting close to those people, because even if your qualms about them are right, God believes that truth and righteousness are actually more contagious than their opposites. Jesus was quite comfortable in the company of the sick and the sinner because his healing love and his mercy are much more virulent. But as often as not, when we follow Christ into fellowship with those people, we will discover that many of the practices that worried us were not wrong or sinful at all, just different. And when we allow them to share their distinctives with us and we unashamedly share ours with them, both of us will be enriched and the gospel of reconciliation will be advanced. The second implication I want to draw from all this is for how we go about reading the Bible. You see, another way in which the Pharisees were just like most of us is that they had no trouble finding Bible verses to support their own practices and prejudices, and Bible verses to condemn the practices of other people. Anything you read can tell you pretty much whatever you want to hear if that's what you're reading it for. If you try to treat the Bible as a constitution or as a rule book, you will find plenty of rules in it that confirm exactly what you have always been brought up to believe, like the importance of washing your hands before meals. And you'll probably succeed in being oblivious to the ones that say inconvenient things like don't eat prawns and wear funny haircuts with dangly bits in front of your ears. But the Bible is not meant to be read as a rule book, and that's not the way that Jesus read it. Rather, it's something of a library that records a long, searching conversation about God, about who God is and what God is on about in the world. And the most important things that it has to say are not mostly found by finding a verse here or there that confirms or criticizes something. They are found in the overall trajectory of the story, which finds its climax in the radically inclusive, reconciling love and mercy of Jesus the Christ. And that story constantly challenges us to stretch our comfort zones and be reconciled to more and more people who we were divided from by differences of belief or practice or lifestyle, even if we had thought they were moral absolutes. And my third and final conclusion is that the way Jesus calls us to read and understand the bits of the Bible that are expressed as laws is to read them in light of that overall trajectory. To read them as the specific applications for some time and place of the endeavour to faithfully live out the life that Jesus is calling us to. They are means to an end, not ends in themselves. And when Jesus was asked on another occasion what was the end, what was the greatest commandment, he had no trouble answering. There are two of paramount importance, he said, love God and love your neighbour. Everything else, all the law, all the prophets, hang on these two. Or in other words, everything else in the law and the prophets is just attempted commentary and application of these two. As the Apostle Paul put it, practice love to the full and the law will take care of itself. And when Jesus was asked for a definition of the neighbour whom we are to love, he spoke of those perceived as enemies and those who we were most separated from by differences of culture and belief and practice. We and the Pharisees actually have rather a lot in common. And thanks be to God, one of the things that we have in common is that we are both invited to the table of grace, where despite our differences and our previous suspicions of one another's unrighteousness and unworthiness, we are both being reconciled to God in the scandalous mercy and the fierce and tender love that are made known to us in Jesus Christ. Amen.